This is part three of a series that we're going through. We started going through the idea of bearing fruit, just for a quick recap. And the idea that God shows us in the Bible is it's not just keeping laws or doing things. God is looking for us to produce something by keeping his laws. God is looking for something to come out of us, and he comes and checks on us. It's like the bush where he goes and says, hey, is this thing bearing fruit? And if it isn't, he digs up around it, and he cultivates it, and he tries again so that it could bear fruit. And this is the picture that he's giving to us. So he's given us his laws, his ways and things to keep, but the intent and the result is to bear fruit out of them. And that is the fruits of the Spirit, the fruits that God gives. And so what we're starting is a series on bearing fruit. Now, we have a formula in the Bible. If you turn over to 2 Peter 1, verse 5, luckily, there's some very specific instructions on how to do this. A lot of times there's nebulous concepts that we may have and say, hey, that sounds good, but how do I actually go do this? And in the case of bearing fruit, in 2 Peter 1, verse 5, we actually have a formula that shows us how to do this. So to recap this, 2 Peter 1, 5 says, but also for this very reason, giving all diligence, add to your faith virtue, to virtue knowledge, to knowledge self-control, to self-control, perseverance, to perseverance, godliness, and to godliness, brotherly kindness, to brotherly kindness, love. For if these things are yours and abound, you will neither be barren or unfruitful in the knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ. And we read down below in 10, it says, if you do these things, you will never stumble. And so this is the formula that we're presented with. And what we're doing is we're taking each one of these things out of the formula, and we are covering it. And what we're going to do is to step through each one. So last time, a couple weeks ago, we covered the first one, which was about faith. And basically for each one of these, I'm going to bring out 3 points. And for faith, we learned a number of things. If you haven't heard that or the first sermon, it's worth going back online to take a listen to those. One, faith is seeing the unseen as more real. You see the unseen as more real, and how that affects life. The authority of God, not just that God exists, but his authority, his kingdom, your place in it. All of these invisible things you see as more real than what you can see with your eyes. 2, faith requires you to follow the pillar of cloud and fire at times. In Israel, there were times where they had to just get up and go a direction wherever the cloud of fire or pillar of smoke went. Or cloud went, and they had to follow that. And a lot of times it wasn't the way that they thought, and the same with us. Faith requires us to follow that cloud, a pillar of fire. And then 3, there's going to be 4 enemies of faith that you have to battle. Fear, anxiety, human reasoning, doubt. You have to battle these 4 things, because that is the human thing that we see, and you have to trust and believe the unseen more than those things. So last time we learned the first pillar is I have faith in a being who's going to guide me through this, the fruits. And faith is made up of those different things. And that's the cornerstone of it. If you don't believe you have a relationship with a being that has your best interest at heart, is going to take you on the right journey, and you trust that unseen more than what you see with your eyes, it's going to be hard. Therefore, this and bearing fruit is the fundamental basis of that, is the relationship with your God underneath it. So we learned about faith. Next in the formula is virtue. So add to your faith virtue. So today, let's talk through what is virtue. What is virtue? Now, virtue, if we go back to the Greek word that's used underneath behind this scripture there, it's the Greek word 703, and it's from 730, so it's a word based on a word. And it has a number of definitions. It's properly, manliness or valor is one of the definitions. Now that one, let's park and hold for a second and come back to that. It's excellence, praise or virtue. It's like a virtuous course of thought, virtuous action, moral goodness, moral excellency, etc. If you look at a definition out on the internet, it's behavior showing high moral standards. If you look at a Strong's definition, it's manliness, it's valor, it's excellence, it's virtue and praise, moral goodness, moral excellence. So one of the words that you can substitute in there for virtue is actually excellence. Excellence. Excellence in what? It's excellence in character. It's excellence in thought. It's excellence in action. The virtues that you hold and keep are those of excellence. So if you think about it, the first point we want to cover is virtue is moral excellence of character. Virtue is moral excellence of character. Now, We're going to dig into this because that sounds like, oh, okay, that's nice. Let's go deeper with this, okay? If we look at this, 2 Peter 1:3, which I think we're already right there. If you just go back up a verse, which this is talking about God, says, as his divine power has given to us all things that pertain to life and godliness through the knowledge of him who has called us by glory and virtue. Our very God is described as being virtuous as well. Excellence of character, excellence in... It's also described that's how he called us. Now, if you think of that, he did this in excellence. He reached out to you and called you in excellence of character. The way that, if you want to think about this, how would that manifest itself? It wouldn't be just a random thing. Like, hey, oh, whoa, hey, there's another dude, come on. Excellence means that he declares something. He says, I'm going to call this person, and he sets it up, and he welcomes you, and he calls you by name. He makes you feel like you're part of the family. If you want to think about how somebody who would act virtuously would act, this is what God is doing with you. Not a randomness, not something that's random, but through excellence, the way that he approaches and does things, excellence in his intents, how he does it, how he goes through it. He did it in a virtue, you know, he did it by glory and virtue. And that's speaking of his virtue, right? That's speaking of his, this is how God himself is. So when we talk about the trait of virtue, we realize, one, that God is that way. He wants us to reflect the same way and to be this way. If you turn to 1 Peter 2:9, we find this word virtue. It's only mentioned a few times in the Bible. It's not all over the place. But the few times it is mentioned, shed some light on it. 1 Peter 2:9, it says, you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, his own special people, that you may proclaim the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. Where's the word virtue there? It's the word praises. If you look underneath it, it's the exact same word. To declare his virtues, or declare the virtues of God and how he is. Like, and you can see, this is a very excellent thing he's describing. You're a chosen generation. You're a royal priesthood, a holy nation, his special people, that you can reflect the virtues of God to other people, if you want to read it that way. That's what he's kind of saying there. He called you out of darkness into a light. So when we think about the excellency of it, the virtue, the character of it, this is how God acted with us. This is how, you can see, he declared it to be a beautiful thing. And he acted out of excellence and brought us out of darkness into a marvelous light. The whole plan, the whole thought, the whole interaction is done with virtue and with excellence, if you want to think of it that way. Now, man, over the years, I mean, if you want to, you can also look at other translations. Sorry about 1 Peter 2:9. The ASV version says excellencies of him. Modern English says goodness of him. And NIV says praise of him. So there's different ways that word is translated, but you can understand or start to get the picture that this is what we reflect of the virtues of God after a while, the excellency of him. Man has tried this over the years, to have virtues and to have excellency. I remember reading the autobiography of Benjamin Franklin. Who's read that? All right. I can see the age. It used to be a thing. It used to be a thing we had to do in school, like a long time ago. So, all right, just ignore that comment. I'm not that old. All right. But the autobiography of Benjamin Franklin. At the age of 20, Benjamin Franklin created a system for developing his character or his virtues. He committed to focusing on one virtue a week. So he came up with a list of virtues, 13 of them that he wrote down. And what are these virtues? They are, one, temperance. Don't, you know, eat not to dullness, drink not to elevation. Be temperate. Silence. Speak not but what may benefit others or yourself. Avoid trifling conversations. Order. Let all things have their place. Let each part of your business have its time. Resolution. Resolve to perform what you ought. Perform without fail what you resolve. Frugality. Make no expense, but do good to others or yourself. Don't waste anything. Industry. Lose no time. Be always employed in something useful. Cut off unnecessary actions. Sincerity. Don't use harmful deceit. Think innocently and justly. And if you speak, speak accordingly. Justice. Wrong none by doing injuries or omitting the benefits that are your duty. Moderation. Avoid extremes. Forbearing. resenting injuries so as you think that they deserve. Cleanliness, tolerate no uncleanliness in the body, clothes, or habitation. Tranquility, be not disturbed at trifles or at accidents, common or unavoidable. Chastity, rarely use venery, but I don't know what some of these words are. Venery, but for health or offspring, never to dullness. Humility, imitate Jesus and Socrates. That's his list. And what he did is he came up with this list of 13, what he calls virtues. And he focused and he picked one of these each week. And he said, I'm going to focus on this virtue this week. And once a week for 13 weeks, then when he got to the end, he would start over and refocus back on the virtue again. And he cycled through this plan four times a year. And he did this from age 20 to age 79 when he died. And he kept a little piece of paper that had these 13 ones listed on it in each day of the week. And if there was a time where he felt that he let down or fell short on meeting a virtue, he would make a little mark in that box for that day for that virtue. So when you think about this concept, I know this is on a human level, but the idea of adding virtue is this idea of deliberately thinking about the excellency of God and the way he is and deliberately adding these things into our lives like Benjamin Franklin did. He did it on a human level and he kept note of it. And he talked about his travails with it. Like, man, some days I could do this well and other days I just failed on it. But he put his mind to it. He knew it was there first and he made a list and he methodically did it. This is what Benjamin Franklin did. How do we do this? There's a number of ways that we do the same. Turn over to Philippians 4, verse 8 through 9. Philippians 4, verse 8 through 9. This is a scripture we read all the time, but it's very important in this context of virtue. Philippians 4, verse 8 through 9. This is one of the other places where the word is mentioned. There's very few places. This is one of them. It says, finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of a good report, if there's any virtue, if there's anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. And these things which you learned and received and heard in me and saw me, these do, and the God of peace will be with you. You can see the instruction is one of deliberateness here. It's one of putting our minds, and if you read this list, all of those things are things of good virtue, aren't they? This is a list of virtues. If you want to have a list like Benjamin Franklin, this would be a good one to put down, because the Bible says, hey, if there are things that are pure, lovely, good report, if there's anything virtue to it, something good and excellence, these are the things to put into our heads, right? Anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. Meditate on these things. You know, is your life characterized by these? Do you choose to think and read or be entertained or look on things that are virtuous and excellent? Or do we fill our brains with just nothing but fluff? Is your character, your speech, your actions, your choice, are they morally excellent? Do you exude an excellence with them? Do you have a heart and appetite for things that are excellent, good and pure? Do you have energetic, vigorous faith, alive, growing in these things? These are questions to ask. And the idea of adding virtue is to think in excellence. And we can take a scripture like this and just dissect it and say, let me just put my brain on some of these things. You know, there's a lot of times I'll drive in the car and, you know, I usually turn the radio on. I'm listening to some great music and bebopping. And every once in a while I feel my brain is starved. So I'll turn it off and I'll put on a podcast or something like that. That's, you know, some topic that's feeding my brain. Something that improves my thought process. Something that gives me a view of something excellent. That's what this means. Think on these type of things. Add them into your life. Not saying be completely boring. I'm going to go see Star Wars tomorrow. Nothing wrong with that, right? It's going to be an excellent movie, I think. So nothing wrong with those things. But I'm saying there are things to put into our brains and to add, and that's when it says add to your faith virtue. This is the mindset we need to seek as we go out into the world and to think and to be like one of virtues and a virtuous mindset. But wait, there's more. You know, because if we stop there, some ways I know you hear this and you're probably sitting there going, wow, this sounds like a very boring life a little bit. You know, the English word virtues translated is not from Latin because, you know, if you look it up in a dictionary, it's going to have kind of slightly different meanings. If you look at the word where it was back in those days, it was from a Greek word, right? They translated virtue. It's from 703, like we talked about before. But if you also look at it, it's also from 720. And the idea, there's another idea that's in this word that's quite interesting. And we see the word that's underneath it translate a lot of times strength, power, might, valor, heroic. It's these things. The Hebrew words used many times as mighty men of valor. It's also translated in other ways, the word underneath it, as a host, as in a large army of warriors. It's rendered strength back when you take an equivalent word back in the Old Testament. David would pray to God. He said, "For thou hast girded me with strength to battle, valor to fight." This is the word virtue too. This also is the word virtue. And if you go back to what David said, he gave thanks to God for his goodness and then details and much. He had a lot of war imagery, his exploits over the enemy. And it was kind of a warlike attitude where he got his strength from God and was able to take and to vanquish the enemies. And we see that as he attacks his enemies. He says, "God is my strength and power. I have run through a troop. He teaches my hands to war so that a bow of steel is broken by my arms. Thou hast given me a shield of thy salvation. I have pursued my enemies," spiritual enemies, whatever they are, "and destroyed them." This is also the meaning of the word virtue. We think of the Benjamin Franklin, and we feel a little bored, and that's it. But you know what? Valor, and mighty men of valor, is a meaning of the word virtue as well, and the word underneath it. So what we learn, number one, we learn that it's excellence of character. But two, it also carries the meaning of valor, like a warrior. Like a warrior. Now let me just say, I want to read you a few things as we go through this, but the idea of being a warrior is not a boring thing. The idea of having that mindset is not a boring thing. Wouldn't it be nice if we could find a word that's close to this in the Old Testament? The word virtue, right? Can you think of a word in the Old Testament? Virtue? Us? Where does virtuous come from? Right? Proverbs 31. Let's turn back to Proverbs 31. Do you know what? This word is underneath Proverbs 31. When we talk about it, it's referring to men in battle because men went to battle. Wouldn't it be nice if this word applied to women? Well, guess what? It's applied to women just as much, and it's the same meaning. So Proverbs 31, verse 10 through 12, it says, "Who can find a virtuous wife? For her worth is far above rubies. The heart of her husband safely trusts her. She will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not evil all the days of her life." Who can find a wife of noble character, valor? The same word, if you look underneath, is there. Ruth 3:11, I won't read it. It says she was a woman of noble character. Again, it's excellence of character, but the nobility side is another nuance to look. If we look at the Hebrew word under here, it says it's probably a force, whether of men, means, or other resources, an army. Valor, strength, able, active, army, band of men, soldiers, a company of forces, goods, hosts, mighty, power, strength, strong, valor, virtuous, war, war-worthy, brave, noble, strong, mighty. Army, men of valor, forces, valiant, strength, power, might, strong. You get the picture. That's the word underneath he who finds a virtuous woman. Right? So when we look at the word virtue, virtuous, in the what this word means, we actually find it's more than just the Benjamin Franklin, which is very important. There is something here that's about battle, mighty, valor. It's about these things. You know, virtue, when you add virtue to your life, you're adding the idea that you're on the grandest adventure you could ever be in any lifetime is what you're called to. And you have to see that it takes valor, it takes strength and might to go do this, to go be part of this. Man, think of all of the movies that you've seen that have this story. You know, it's a normal, average person all of a sudden gets thrown into the middle of some big adventure, and they realize they're just a normal person, but they have to fight against all odds, and they have to prevail, and they come out the end, and it's just this amazing feeling of victory over. I mean, every Lord of the Rings, right? Bilbo Baggins and Frodo had to take a ring and destroy it, and all the travails they went through. Average, normal little hobbits going through a big journey. Star Trek, boldly go where no man has gone before. Normal people going out and doing valiant, heroic, big things. Star Wars. What about Star Wars? What about them? The Rebel Alliance. They've got no power or nothing against this mighty Death Star and this mighty empire. And they have to take on unimaginable odds. And they have to fight with valor and honor and the Jedi Knight and the code and all of the things that are around that. Same story. Gladiator, the movie. Love the movie. Gladiator, he had a strength and he took on the armies. And he fought took on the Romans and he fought. He had a strength there. Braveheart. Maybe Braveheart, a person who was a leader who had to go in valor and fight against all odds and to be tortured but never give up and to go through this. Are you getting the picture of what I'm saying? The word virtue is not just Benjamin Franklin. The word virtue is this. This is the thing that we have to put in our mindset. Finding Nemo. Let me throw that one in there. Right? Against all odds, a little fish with a bum flipper. Right? When you think about all the travails and the things you have to go through. This is the story of every movie that pulls our hearts and we feel like, yeah, I could do that. Guess what? You're called to a bigger thing than any of those movies ever were. If you just like stop for a second and realize what you are called to, where you're going, what battles you have to fight, and where you're going to end up, this is a story that is the most amazing story you could ever think of, more than every one of these movies. The valor that's required in these movies is the valor that's required for us. When it says to add virtue, it says add valor. Add this valor. Add this mindset. It's going to be required. You know, I love when Gladiator, when he's at the end and, you know, he's like, what's your name? And don't turn your back to me. And he turns around and he says, you know, my name is Maximus Decimus Meridius, commander of the armies of the north, the general of the Felix legions. Loyal servant to the true emperor, Marcus Aurelius. Father to a murdered son, husband to a murdered wife, and I will have my vengeance in this life or the next. And you know that quote that he does when he's standing up against all odds. I'm not saying that that's, well, you know, we're not fighting like that. But the mentality is one of valor. And this is the thought. When you see those movies, yeah, we're not out, you know, fighting with swords. But they required valor to do these things. Turn back to 2 Samuel 23, verse 8. 2 Samuel 23, verse 8. 2 Samuel 23, verse 8. I love this chapter, reading it sometimes, because I just think, man, it's, you know, it's a different context. These guys had to fight back in those days. We're not condoning and saying violence and fighting is okay, but in that time, in that day, they had to fight. And God fought their battles for them. But there were a few men that are described and written down in the Bible for us. The Bible records them and their names and their deeds. Why? Because they were mighty men of valor. And the things that they did took amazing mentality to have valor. 2 Samuel 23, verse 8 says, these are the names of the mighty men whom David had. There was Joab, Bathsheba, the Tachmonite. I don't get all those names, sorry. He was chief among the captains. He was called Adino the Esnite because he had killed 800 men at one time. So you're starting to get the ranking of who is the mightiest of these people. And they kind of rank them and show you like, man, these guys are in a league of their own. Right? And he's in a league of his own. He killed 800 men at one time. And after him was Eleazar, the son of Dodo, the Ahohite, which I'm sure he didn't use that name. It didn't strike fear, the son of Dodo. One of the three mighty men with David when they defied the Philistines who were gathered there for battle. And the men of Israel had retreated. He arose and attacked the Philistine until his hand was weary and his hand stuck to the sword. The Lord, notice this. even with the mighty men, even though they did battle, we find out who was behind them. It says, the Lord brought about a great victory that day, and the people returned after him only to plunder. It required him to go do. It required him to have a mentality of valor. It required him to fight spiritually, physically in those days. His hand, if you ever held a sword that's heavy for a long time, or a hammer, I don't know if you ever framed houses. I framed houses for a couple summers. And you go down and nail the whole center beam, start to finish, you get to the end when it, starting out. Couldn't open my hand. It's frozen. I had to pry my own fingers off. If you ever experienced that, this is what it's saying. This guy fought till this happened. Right? He fought with a sword till this happened. But again, the Lord struck a great victory. What do you think it took for these people to stand in the gap? Virtue, valor. Think of those two V's together, virtue, valor. Virtues of Benjamin Franklin, moral excellency, but there's also valor and strength and excellency of doing the battle spiritually. And then 11, says after him was Shammah, the son of Agi, the Philistines had gathered together into a troop where there was a piece of ground full of lentils. So the people fled from the Philistines. But he stationed himself in the middle of the field, defended and killed the Philistines. So the Lord brought about a great victory. Look, again. Then three of the 30 chief men went down at harvest time and came to David at the cave of Adullam. And the troop of the Philistines encamped in the valley of Rephaim. David was then in the stronghold, and the garrison of the Philistines was then in the Bethlehem. And David said with longing, oh, that someone would give me a drink of the water from the well of Bethlehem, which is by the gate. Not here, way through enemy lines back over there. So the three mighty men broke through the camp of the Philistines, drew water from the well of Bethlehem that was by the gate, and took it and brought it to David. You think of this act. Just at the mere suggestion of David, their leader, he said that they fought through people, went and got some water, brought it back to him. David had excellence of character himself, because look what he did next. Nevertheless, he wouldn't drink it, but he poured it out to the Lord in honor. And he said, far be it from me, O Lord, that I should do this. Is it not the blood of the men who went in jeopardy of their lives? Therefore, he would not drink it. And it says, these things were done by the three mighty men. So the Bible calls out mighty men for a reason. We're not fighting physically today, but you and I are doing battle spiritually today, aren't we? Aren't we? That's why this is written here. These men, back in those days, had to go stand up and defend a field, or had to wipe out 800 people at once. These were the big bad guys of the day. Muscular fighters, mentality of valor. These scriptures are written for us today to help us understand what the word virtue means, and that we have to add valor when we start out on a journey. So we covered faith, right? You have to believe that being is going to take you on this journey. Two, you have to have a mentality of valor as you start this journey. It's going to go ways you didn't think. It's going to be tough. You're going to have to stand in the gap. There are spiritual battles that you're going to have to fight. You're going to have to be like a mighty man. You're going to have to be like one of these. And there's a whole bunch of another, right? There is the brother of Joab in verse 18. He was chief of another three. He lifted his spear against 300, killed them, won a name among the three. Was he not the most honored of the three? Therefore, he became their captain. But he didn't attain the first three. So we're saying, there's these first three that are the biggest, baddest guys you've ever seen. Now there's a next rank down. Didn't do 800 people, but 300. And they, there's a next set of three. And then there's this, verse 20. The son of valiant men who had done many deeds. He had killed two lion-like heroes of Moab. He had also gone down and killed a lion in the midst of a pit on a snowy day. A lion jumped down in there, killed it in a pit. That's crazy, if you think about it. It's a man against a lion. And he killed an Egyptian, a spectacular man. The Egyptian had a spear in his hands, so he went down to him with a staff, wrestled the spear in his hand, and killed him with his own spear. And he won a name among the mighty. He was more honored than the 30, but he did not attain the first three. Etc. Right? Those stories spark, amazing pictures and thoughts of valor and battles and things. And I know a lot of times we long for some of those kind of things these days. And I'm not saying just fighting, but just the grandness of an adventure, the valor that's required, the things you see in a movie, the overcoming the Rebel Alliance and coming out the other end victorious. But we have that. We have the most amazing story that you have to realize The second thing in this journey of bearing fruit is to realize you're in the most amazing story that could ever be told, and it requires you to have excellence of character but valor to do it, like a mighty man. That's the second thing we learn. When you dig apart and tease apart this word, you see that's underneath us in so many ways. Let's see, we have another example of, I won't read all the way through it, but who's another person of valor? Samson was. Even though he went awry and he had a weakness in certain things, he did some amazingly physical feats. And he's listed in what chapter in the New Testament? It's in the faith chapter, you know. Samson's in the faith chapter, and he did some amazing, huge physical feats. And it was by God's Spirit coming on him. So what we find is our very God has excellence of character, but our very God's Spirit and the way he works also requires valor and to take and tackle these things. God's Spirit came upon him. He did great feats. God gave the battle to these other mighty men. You see the pattern that's here. We don't physically fight, but we spiritually fight. It's the same thing. Requires the same mentality of valor. You have to know you're in this story, and you have to know it requires valor. Read the examples of those in the Old Testament. They're written there for a reason. They should spark something in you. They should make you feel like, yeah, man, I wish I was like that. Virtue says be like that. Virtue says add that. Virtue says think like that. Virtue says it's required of us if we want to bear fruit, is to firmly understand that we're on the greatest journey, and that it means you're like a warrior, and that you have valor like in the heat of battle. So add to your faith virtue. The first addition of faith is an offensive weapon almost, given to us by God. Virtue, it's a quality of valor, makes us like the mighty men in the war David was. Men of strength, mighty men, strong men and women in the spirit, proactive, attacking the enemy. This all comes in realizing that God is the Almighty One who does his conquering. We read that throughout those things. Not only for us, but in and through us. But you have to get up and stand in battle. Virtue says this is how you have to think. So, when I read that, and I go through and read the Bible on that, wow, that's more interesting. I feel, at least me as a guy, I don't know about you. But, you know, it sparks something. It sparks something that I think is quite amazing. Third, let's cover the third thing about virtue. Third thing is that virtue is active and it's outward to others. You know, what does James 2, verse 18 to 22 say? It says, you have faith, I have works. Show me your faith without works and I'll show you my faith by my works. It's virtuous action. Virtue requires action. We read the mighty men. They had to go stand in the middle of the field and battle. They had to go do it. And virtue is always active, and it's always outward towards other people, so that people should feel and know they're in the presence of someone who with excellence of character and are dealt with excellently. Not harshly, not a bunch of things, but with the regalness and royalty, with the grace, with the excellency of spirit, with the helping, with all of the things that would say is a virtuous person, with valor, can help other people. You're not out to destroy people. You're out to exude what God does to you and how he called you in excellence. And you work with people in excellence, with virtue and with valor, and you do battle that way. Let's turn back to Psalms 15. And we'll finish up on here with Psalms 15. Psalms 15 is a, if you want to rethink it, it's a description of working with others or exuding virtue, virtuousness. Psalms 15, moral excellency, integrity. It says, Lord, who may abide in your tabernacle? Who may dwell on your holy hill? So it's what's the type of person that abides in his family, his church, his tabernacle, and when he comes back will be part of it. What's the type of person that will be there? It's a virtuous person. One who, two, walks uprightly with integrity, works righteousness, right? Goes out and works righteousness, speaks the truth in his heart, not just words, but is constantly evaluating, looking, saying, am I truthful to myself? Am I being truthful to myself? Or am I deceiving myself? But he goes out and does this and works righteousness, the right things. Not for his own glory. If you read all of these things, these are all genuinely excellent qualities of character in how you interact with other people. 3, he does not backbite with his tongue, nor does evil to his neighbor, nor does he take up a reproach against a friend. That's a huge one. There is no talking about and around other people, passively or not. You know, I'm really concerned about this person. They just seem to be going off the track, and because they're... Go have a conversation with your brother if you think that. Find out where they're at. Help them directly. Backbiting is saying things a certain way so that it just subtly about somebody, subtly about somebody else. He doesn't do evil. He's only doing good to his neighbor, no matter what the neighbor does. Think about these. These are excellence of character, valor. He doesn't take up a reproach against a friend. Somebody comes and starts to reproach, starts to say, starts to tear down. You have a decision. You know what? I'm not picking that up. I'm going to maintain, and I'm going to be for my friend, and I'm going to stop that. Doesn't pick up a reproach against a friend. That's a friend. Can you see the excellency here? This is how God works. Do you know that too? All these things describe how God works, and these are the people that will be with God and in his kingdom who have this type of character, in whose eyes a vile person is despised. But he honors those who fear the Lord. He declares things that are evil as they are. The evil in the world, the sin. He's not destroying people, but he is saying, you know what's happened today is the opposite's happened. Evil starting to get praised. Things that are upside down are starting to be seen as normal. Things that are of God are starting to be seen as vile. Calling good bad and calling bad good. This is saying this person can declare that plainly, and he will value the things of God and the people of God who live by God's way. That's a thing that you want to promote. You're not going to get it all muddled and all mixed up. He swears to his own hurt and does not change. If he says he's going to do something for you, then he does something for you. Even if it causes him problems or pain or lost money or whatever, he says, I said it, I will do it. Right? He doesn't change. He doesn't all of a sudden flip-flop on it. And he doesn't put his money out at usury. Right? He's not trying to take advantage of you. He wants to, in excellence of character, help you. Not take advantage of you. Get some money and interest. Oh, I'm going to make a little profit off these people. Nor does he take a bribe against the innocent. Nor does he take a bribe. Bribes back in the day were a common thing. You know, just do this. Why don't we just join together and do this? Nope, he doesn't do that. He who does these things shall never be moved. Okay, that sounds like the same phrase we have in 2 Peter 1:5 too. He who does these things shall never be moved. When you read a list like this, when you read Philippians 4 verse 8, I think you have some things to think and put in your brain like Benjamin Franklin and put a list together. You know, put a dot. How am I doing against thinking about these things? How am I doing against living like this in a virtuous way? How am I doing against spiritual battles and being like a mighty man of war? How am I doing against these type of things? No bad motives. Pure. Excellence of character. This journey requires that. And we learn this. So then we start out with the faith in a being who's taking us on the most amazing journey you could ever think. And we trust, no matter which way that goes, that we will follow him. We have to equip our minds, secondly, with virtue, excellence of the way we interact, to reflect God in to others actively, reflect his way, and think, put these things in our brains, and interact with other people that way. And not only that, it's going to require this journey the biggest acts of valor. So when they write the mighty men in the future, it's going to be spiritual acts. But it will be the same mentality what was required of the mighty men to stand in the gap, to fight the enemy, required to equip it. And it will be like the most amazing movie you've ever seen. Better than any movie. Those movies pull at our hearts, and it will be better than any one of those and requires any more than any one of those. So when we look at virtue, excellency of character, and valor for the battle is what it requires.